because we haven't been doing a very good job for you lately. We haven't been doing the one thing that my father has always taught us to do, and that's listen to our audience. We've let middle managers air their petty grievances. We've been suffocating our superstars, and all of that is going to change, and it starts tonight. We're off to a fresh start.
We're going to give you what you want. As of now, you are the authority.
I come to you from the future. These people are liars. Don't believe them.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
We're like fighting a woman.
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo! I am a one-man wrecking crew.
This is episode 622 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. I was going back and forth last night between the Yankees and Astros game, which had a much better finish than Hell in a Cell did. Unless you're a Yankee fan, then I guess it wasn't such a good finish. But it was a great game. And also the match between Kenny Omega and Phoenix for the AAA Mega Heavyweight title at their Heroes Immortales show, which was being streamed on Twitch. It's a great match. And a surprise finish, too. Omega won the championship. I would not have expected that. So we've had the Young Bucks now as AAA Tag Team Champions recently. We now have Omega as the Mega Champion. Or is it Omega winning the Mega title? It makes me wonder if that means the Lucha Bros are a lock to win the AEW Tag Team titles as part of some kind of unannounced working agreement between the two companies. AAA was not the only promotion streaming live on Twitch last night. Impact. Good old Impact Wrestling. They ran their All Glory stream to showcase Impact stars and live matches from different Chicago indie groups there in Illinois. Because Impact is in town for its Bound for Glory pay-per-view tonight. And so this All Glory show was streamed on Twitch from Josh Matthews' cell phone. Now, we know this because at one point, Matthews literally jumped in front of the person filming with a beer in his hand. What else is new? The guy looked three sheets to the wind when I saw him emceeing the Hall of Fame induction for Abyss, and that was before the event even started. He jumps in front of the phone and says, "Hey guys, are we done? Because I need my phone." He grabs the phone. They're telling him, "Hey, we got 900 people watching live." He's like, "Oh, we got 900 people watching live. We'll be back. We're going to go find another phone." Kind of, it looked like he suddenly realized he had nudes on there or something, and he was worried somebody might find him. "I got nudes on the phone! I need my phone back for the nudes!" Anyway, he literally ended the stream with 900 people watching because he needed his phone back. And I saw, I think it was Ryan Satin, say that he clicked onto the stream, and it was a guy on a cell phone. Obviously, it was Josh's cell phone, walking around just saying, you know, "Hey, high fives for Twitch," to random people in the crowd. And then somebody says to him, "Hey, follow me on Twitter." And the camera guy shouts, "No," while running away. The spirit of TNA lives on. Oh, my God. Actually, you know what? Scott D'Amore announced at the show last night that we are going to see TNA one more time over WrestleMania weekend. Whatever the hell that means. I have an interview up with the NWA Vice President, David Lagana. I've had David on the show before. Last time I had him on was probably 2.5 years ago. And at the time, he was working with Billy Corgan on this 30 days project where they were traveling the country. He was away from home on the road with Billy and nothing but a camera for 30 days, traveling to random places and seeing the sights of America that people don't normally see, these little towns, and Billy would just sort of, they'd be walking around, that he'd park himself in a place and start playing music on the street, and people would come over. It was an interesting project. Those videos, I assume, are all still archived on YouTube. Probably if you just type in Billy Corgan, 30 days. But, you know, they formed a relationship together when Billy was working with Impact, because Lagana was working there as well at the time. And, you know, David has kind of become his right-hand man on all this stuff. And it had been a long time since we had had a conversation on the podcast about the NWA. So I thought, you know, with the NWA Power Show debuting, this was the perfect time to get him back on. And we had a 45-minute chat that was really well-received. I'm really happy with how it came out. And it's on YouTube. It's also, I push it out to the feed as well. And there were some really interesting parts in there, not just about the NWA, but also about Corgan's lawsuit with Impact, because things got very messy there for a while. And he even mentioned on the podcast, he mentioned a claim about Impact being insolvent at that time and somebody lying in court about it. Interesting stuff. So again, if you haven't seen it, I think it's worth, and you have some time to kill, please definitely go back and check that out. I covered episode 2 of NWA Power already, so I'm not going to get into it here today, but I covered it as part of what I called my Elite Power stream. I kind of merged my AEW Dynamite review with my NWA Power review on the stream on Wednesday night. And so I talked about both shows there. Also push that out to the stream as well, but it's always helpful, of course, to hop over onto YouTube and give that video a view and a like. They did announce their live pay-per-view is going to be called Into the Fire, named after the song by Dokken that you hear at the top of the NWA show every week. They're taping at the studio again December 14, 15, and 16, and so on the 14th, that will be the live pay-per-view that they're going to be doing. Which I believe will be airing on Fight TV. The last NWA pay-per-view is not the first one they've done. The last one they did was back in April before the TV show debuted. That was when they resurrected the Crockett Cup. And that show is headlined by Nick Aldis defending the world's heavyweight title against the villain Marty Scurll. They already sold out of tickets in studio. It's not a very big studio, obviously. It fits between 200 and 300 people, so even a little less than Full Sail does. So you knew those tickets were going to go quickly, but if you want to watch it, I don't know if it'll be on traditional pay-per-view, but it will be on Fight. And all of the TV that is going to be on the YouTube channel these next few weeks is all building to this Into the Fire show. They taped 9 episodes, 9 hours worth of television in 2 days at the beginning of the month. So they're all taped and booked out through this this next pay-per-view on the 14th. You can get 20% off right now all shirts in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees if you go to prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff through tomorrow, through midday, tomorrow, October 21st. Get 20% off when you use the code RETAIL at checkout, and that includes our Halloween shirts. So if you want to pick those up and possibly get them before Halloween, it's going to be close, but you can use that code and pick up one of those shirts right now. Could also become a PayPal VIP if you would like to support the show. You can go to thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. Or you can use my email, thesolomonster@gmail.com, if that's easier. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to all of our VIPs this week, including the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Anarchist Andrew Heller, Stephen Handyman Halistick, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eicher, The Griller Ray Gritt, Killshot Keith Hart, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, who I'm told is visiting New York City for the first time this weekend as an early birthday gift that he was given. If I see anybody dancing in the streets, I will say hello. Normally, I would shy away from somebody like that if they're just randomly dancing in the streets. That probably means they're dangerous, but in this case, I'll make an exception. Thank you to the Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes, Project Zero Immortal, or Project Zero Mortals. I think Immortals is cooler, but Project Zero Mortals, Wayne Ashanti, Josh the Shooter Stockton Kingmaker, Christos Kalantzis, and Paul and BB as well, thank you very much. And on iTunes, Ghost Ham, been listening for a decade, thank you. And Skiles ASMB, thank you to him as well. And Downtown Kenny Brown, I can't forget about Kenny. Kenny has been listening to the show since 2010 and is currently stationed overseas in Japan. He keeps up with wrestling through this podcast. And he says he's been loving all the extra content lately. I hope everybody else is too, because I'm putting out more of it now than ever before. So thank you to him for that. 4 months. If you had 4 months in the pool for how long Eric Bischoff would last in his role as executive director of SmackDown, then congratulations, you win a prize. Eric Bischoff was fired this week. On Tuesday, WWE announced a corporate shakeup of sorts with Bruce Pritchard, who was already back in the company. He had come back to the company in February after a number of years away. Bruce Pritchard was announced as the new executive director for Friday Night SmackDown, reporting directly to Vince McMahon, and thus, with Pritchard now being the head cheese over there, thus ending any notion whatsoever, however thin it was to begin with, that SmackDown would have its own creative vision, independent of, or maybe not even independent, but less influenced by Vince McMahon. That just went out the window. Bischoff is gone not only from the executive director role, he's gone from the company altogether. This was not him being reassigned. This was not him being promoted or demoted. This was him being fired. He was let go. He's no longer employed by World Wrestling Entertainment. Does he have some kind of non-compete like the talent does, where he can't just jump over to an AEW or something? That I don't know. I don't even know if he would want to do that. But he is gone from WWE. Now, Bischoff has largely been out of the wrestling business since his stint as the Raw General Manager ended in 2005. He had a couple of years or so with TNA. He came in with Hogan. He had some influence. The only thing I can recall hearing about at the time that was credited to Bischoff that I remember actually liking was that TNA reaction show. My understanding is that that was his idea or his concept, or he pitched hard for it. And the way that they shot that at the time I thought was very innovative. That is the only thing I can think of that could be credited, possibly, to Eric Bischoff during his time in TNA. Otherwise, it was just a constant stream of stories about how disliked he was and how difficult he was to work with. He was not a very beloved person by the talent then behind the scenes at Impact. And in the Observer this week, there was a source that told Meltzer that Eric had no vision and he lacked the stamina for the rigors of this SmackDown job. Now, you know, you think, well, what are these rigors, right? What are these rigors, you might ask? You know, here's a person in Vince McMahon who calls creative meetings that a lot of times will go into the wee hours of the night. Then on Tuesday, or I guess now it would be Friday, right? In a typical week, we were hearing stories about this up until a few weeks ago. 2 hours before the show, Vince McMahon would turn around and rip up the script, and he would write a new one. So imagine working on that creative team. And I don't even think Bischoff was really that heavily involved in like writing or anything like that, but imagine being involved with that creative team. You work on this script, which isn't very good to begin with, because you're working within the parameters of what the old man wants, not what you think may be the best show. That's what's going on here. I'm sure they have some very talented creative minds on those teams. How could they not? Think of all the writers they have under contract. Think of how big and bloated we've heard that these teams are. You don't think they have some people who are actually smart and creative? I'm sure they do. But they're not putting together the best show that they think is going to appeal to people. They're putting together a show that appeals to an audience of one. And they spend hours and hours and hours doing this. They're working overnight, midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., only to see it all blown up before the show, and all your work was for nothing. Now, with Bischoff, apparently he'd work a full day doing what? I don't know. I don't know what a full day in WWE looked like for Eric Bischoff. I almost have visions in my head of, what was it, George Costanza on that episode of Seinfeld, where he doesn't really do much of anything. That was Eric Bischoff in WWE. Apparently he'd work a full day. And the reason I say that also is because by all accounts, Bruce Pritchard and Ed Koski have basically been running SmackDown since the summer. This is not going to be a new role for Pritchard, only in title. He's already been at the helm of SmackDown now for 3 or 4 months. So anybody thinking that this show is all of a sudden going to have this radical change between the Pritchard promotion and the draft, man, this show is going to do a complete 180. It's going to be awesome. Pritchard's running it now. He's been doing this now for months and nothing has changed. And nothing will. But Bischoff would work a full day. I guess he's been trying to familiarize himself with the roster and how things work. Then he would go out to dinner with his wife. And then people in the company would complain that he was unreachable after 7 o'clock on some nights. And look, I work in a service industry. So I know what it's like to have to be on call 24/7 in the event of a crisis or an emergency, you know, a client crisis of some kind. I'm sure some of you do also. I'm not the only one who works in some kind of service-related industry. You know, not everybody can just leave work at 5 o'clock and kind of turn off their phone and not be reachable. So I'm sure a lot of people listening to this can relate to that. But here's the thing I don't get. This guy had a good life, right? He had a home, he had a cabin up in Wyoming, which was apparently his happy place. He was there with his wife. He didn't need this job. But he dropped all of that, and he moved himself and his wife from Wyoming to Stamford, Connecticut. I don't know that you can get any further away from Wyoming in this country than Stamford. I mean, geographically, I don't know if that's true, but I'm just saying, in terms of the life that he was living out there to the life I'm sure he was living in Stamford, you know, it's going from one extreme to the other. I hope he didn't sell that cabin. He may have. But he uprooted, he and his wife, to Connecticut for this. And 4 months later, they fire him. But the point I was getting at is that a lot of people know what it's like to have, you know, to have to work sometimes after hours. But imagine complaining about the guy because he went to dinner with his wife and then he couldn't, you know, he wouldn't answer his phone after working a full day. Oh, what a horrible thing. What a horrible thing. I'd turn my phone off too if I had to work with a person like that. Or I wouldn't have taken the job in the first place. Bischoff was gracious in his only public comments so far. He was tweeting good things about Bruce Pritchard because the two of them had become friends over the years. Called him a great producer and a good friend. Pritchard returned in kind on his Twitter by saying some nice things about Eric. When this move was first announced, I said at the time, despite my feelings about Bischoff in the past, about his resume of success in wrestling being very overblown, and I stand by that. I think people definitely overrate this notion that Bischoff is some kind of huge success. He achieved success in WCW, yes. And he did nothing of note ever since in wrestling. So he'll be in the Hall of Fame one day and he's going to be remembered for a 3-year period. Over 20 years ago. His entire reputation is staked on those 83 weeks. What has he done since then that would lead you to believe that he is some kind of creative genius or business genius? What has he done? Now, despite this, I said that I was still cautiously optimistic because at least it meant that there was a recognition that a change was needed. And Bischoff has made some comments. At the time, he had made some comments not long before this, maybe last year. He was over in the UK. It might have been one of these Inside the Ropes Q&A events that they do over in the UK. I listened to this soundbite, to this video, where he sounded quite reasonable as to why WWE's brand extension was such a failure and why each show needs to have its own distinct brand identity. He was saying all the right things, and I had hoped that maybe just possibly he might be able to bring a different pair of eyes to a product that was, and still is all these months later, badly in need of a refresh. And here we are. Here we are, 4 months later, with Paul Heyman supposedly leading or influencing the creative direction of Monday Night Raw, and the shows are no better than they were 4 months ago. You may get a few great matches on the show some weeks, but Monday Night Raw is every bit as insufferable to sit through on most weeks now as it was 4 months ago. And people will continue to make excuses. The draft, Solomonster, the draft is going to change everything. The wild card rule is gone and the draft is going to fix things. The draft is going to change nothing. Yes, I hope by ditching the wild card rule, the shows will be easier to follow and there'll be a slight improvement in that regard because the wild card rule was stupid from the moment that it was announced. And they've said that they're getting rid of it now. But the draft itself is going to change nothing. It looks like we may be getting a program on SmackDown between Daniel Bryan and Shinsuke Nakamura. I like that idea. Two men who were already, though, on the same brand. How can you say that, you know, things are going to be radically different? The brand split will change nothing. Do you realize, and I played this clip at the top of the show, and I did that for a reason. Do you realize that it has been almost one full year? 10 months ago, Vince McMahon stood in the middle of the ring with his daughter, with his son Paul, with Shane McMahon, apologizing to the fans for not delivering the best product they possibly could and telling us that we are now the authority. Remember that? Triple H saying, you are the authority. I suppose that's just a very vocal minority, right, of internet fans, though? It's just people like me who complain about Monday Night Raw, right? Isn't that the case? Well, then why did they stand in the middle of the ring on live television and admit to the world that their television show sucks? Why, because a vocal minority said so? You think that's why they did that? They know it's terrible. They said as much on live TV. You don't need to take my word for it. It's still on YouTube. Go back and watch it. And they promised changes. You're going to see some new faces, which we did. But you're going to see that everything's going to be refreshed and we're going to do a better job for you because you deserve it. All they're saying all the right things. Kissing all of our asses. They promised changes. And here we are almost a year later. And yes, some of the faces have changed. The announcers have changed. The music has changed. The graphics have changed. The set has changed. All cosmetic. And some of them, I like some of those changes. But the show is still a bore on most weeks. Now, why is that? Why is that? WWE cannot fire its way out of this. They can fire as many people as they want. The only person that matters is the one at the top. And the person at the top is not going anywhere. Which means that all of these changes are cosmetic and meaningless. Because it is still the Vince McMahon show. And Bischoff can be the scapegoat for today. Bruce Pritchard will be the scapegoat tomorrow. You can bet your ass on that. The same fate awaits him. He's smart enough to know that, though, because he's worked for Vince McMahon on and off for like 30 years. So I think if he plays his cards right, it'll take a little while longer for it to happen to him. You know, for him to be thrown under the bus. Heyman, who knows how long he'll last in that role. But it's always someone else's fault. So this week, Bischoff was the fall guy. This week it was Eric Bischoff's turn. Maybe one day we can get his new 83 Days podcast and he'll be able to share what he really thinks about his time there. Meanwhile, they fired Bischoff, right, in favor of Pritchard, who's had his fingerprints on the show going back months. And Friday's show fell for the second straight week, and it was a big drop, too. Last week's draft show did almost 2.9 million viewers on Fox. This week's show is down to about 2.4 million. And the only saving grace here is that they actually added 100,000 viewers from hour one to hour two. That means that in the span of just 3 weeks, their first show on Fox, right? Remember their first big show on Fox, October 4th, they blew it out, man. They had The Rock. They had some of these big names. They had a ladder match. They had a WWE Championship match with Brock Lesnar. So they really went all in on that first show. It's been 3 weeks, and in those 3 weeks, they have lost almost 1.5 million viewers. You know, we talk about the ratings drops for AEW and for NXT, which are very real, and I'm going to talk about that later. But to lose almost 1.5 million viewers, that is quite the indictment of what people think of the WWE product right now. They got these people, probably a combination of newer viewers, maybe some lapsed fans who haven't watched wrestling in a very long time. They got these people to tune in on week one to check out the show, and those people basically said, yeah, I think I'm good, thanks. They are at raw numbers. They're at Monday Night Raw numbers, and Monday Night Raw airs on USA. This is network television, and they're already at Raw numbers. And it is worth pointing out, when you factor in the DVR numbers, that first Fox show that everyone thought did 3.8 million actually ended up doing 4.4 million, which is a pretty big jump from 3.8 to 4.4. So the number this week, you would have to think that 2.4 million is also going to go up. I don't know if it's going to go up a lot. I don't know if it's going to go up a little bit, but you do have to factor in the DVR numbers as well. But even when you factor them in, though, let's say the first show did 4.4. Okay, what's this week going to go up to? 2.7, 2.8? That's still a humongous drop. You know, if it holds steady, the drop from week one to week three would actually be a hell of a lot more than 1.5 million viewers. It would be worse. So, you know, with a drop like, I mean, I'm looking at this, I'm like, with a drop like that, they may rehire Bischoff tomorrow just so they can fire him again. I said this on the podcast last Sunday, and I've seen others this week parroting the same talking point, because it's true. Because people are coming around now to the idea, exactly what I said last week, wrestling is not hot. And yeah, a lot of that is just the WWE product. It's just, it's not cool anymore. But wrestling is not hot. It is not cool to the masses. Just because there is so much of it, there's more now than ever on television, does not mean that it's hot. You can look at the Wednesday night numbers and see it. But you can also look at this show. You can look at SmackDown and see it. And there is not a wrestling show anywhere else on television with the kind of deal and the audience reach on Fox that SmackDown has. And it has not made hardly any difference at all. And why should it? The McMahons getting $1 billion out of Fox may be the biggest swindle in the history of television. WWE rounded out its 2019 draft on Raw Monday night, a draft where it felt like very little actually changed. The Twitter poll, over 3,800 votes, just 17% thumbs up, 83% thumbs down. For Raw, almost the exact inverse of this week's AEW poll, which was 82 up and 18 down. Before I get to the draft results, just some hits and misses from the show. One hit was the Viking Raiders winning the Raw Tag Team titles from Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. They've kept the Vikings strong. They've made them champions now. I just wish they would have, you know, instead of just putting the title on them like cold, like this, they would have first put them in some kind of a real feud, so it would have meant something. It would have meant more when they actually won the belts. But I also want world peace, and I know that this is probably an equally ridiculous thing to ask for. So with this win, they become the only team to be the Raw Tag Team Champions, the NXT Tag Team Champions, the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, and the IWGP Tag Team Champions, which is pretty cool. The Street Profits, they were laid out backstage by the OC. They then teased a six-man match for later in the show, but then it was never mentioned again. So maybe they're saving it for tomorrow night. I don't know. The fact that we may finally get to see the Street Profits do something on this show other than just lame comedy in the back, I classify that as a hit. Then we had the contract signing. We had a contract signing with Braun Strowman and Tyson Fury for their match at Sweet Saudi Money 4. Fury is said to be making around $15 million for this match. Now that is the Daily Mail reporting that in the UK, and as I've been warned by many of you UK folks, take what the Daily Mail says with about a mound of salt. But Alex McCarthy of TalkSport, who I think is a credible source, he said he asked around. And that number is in the ballpark. So if it isn't $15 million, maybe it's $10 million. Maybe it's $12 million. The point is, it's a lot of freaking money that he's getting paid for this one match. That is some sweet Saudi money. And that's why you're seeing that match in Saudi Arabia and not at WrestleMania next year. Although I think Fury's also having a fight in February. So who knows physically what condition he'll be in after that fight. I guess this was just the time that made sense, right? He's in between fights. He's overall pretty healthy. So they decided to go ahead and do the match. And also, here's the other reason. Because they are paying him with Saudi money. They're not going to pay, WWE is not going to pay $15 million out of their own pocket, which is what they would have to do if he were to wrestle 5 minutes against Braun Strowman at WrestleMania. It just economically doesn't make any sense. The contract signing itself, this was just a swing and a miss. The very end of it, yeah, this usual dialogue from these two. And Tyson Fury, and Braun too, you know, Braun, when he's not overly scripted, he's a pretty good talker, very articulate guy. Tyson Fury is known for being, you know, a good talker. But there's just nothing about this that sounds or feels genuine. And then at the end of it, Braun just angrily smashes the table in front of them, breaks it in half. And so Fury then picks up a pen, the pen that he signed the contract with, and he tries two or three times to break it, and he can't break it. And I thought, well, where is this going? You know, is he then going to just hold it up in Braun's face and break it, and then ink is going to go all over his eyes or something? I don't know. But no, he couldn't break it. And then on the last attempt, he broke it, and then he just walked off. And it was so awkward. Like, I have no idea what that was about. I don't know if that's some kind of a nod to something, or that was just fucking weird. It looked very awkward. It looked very lame. Here's another miss from this show. Natty. Natty teased a mystery partner to take on the Kabuki Warriors, and it turned out to be Lacey Evans. The same Lacey Evans that she has spent the last month and a half fighting, tooth and nail, I guess by beating her, she suddenly gained respect for Lacey Evans. Respect for the woman who cheap-shotted her with a punch after one of their matches. SmackDown's own Lacey Evans. And then I got chewed out by people on Twitter pointing out that, oh, the brand split doesn't take effect until after the draft is over, man. Pay attention to the show, man. Oh, really? Okay, I apologize, you know? And that's funny, because Seth Rollins is defending his championship against The Fiend at Crown Jewel, you fool. And Bray, last I checked, is on SmackDown now. So, Seth Rollins is defending his championship against a member of the SmackDown roster. That, plus, of course, we have Survivor Series coming up, which at least as of a couple of months ago was still having the whole Raw versus SmackDown theme. So please tell me again how the brand split, right, took effect this past Friday, not on Monday. It took effect on Friday. You know, I have to assume you have a smartphone, yes? Your smartphone has a calendar app. I suggest you start using it. Stop making excuses for them. But yes, they are not only doing Rollins and The Fiend again for the title at Sweet Saudi Money 4 War, what is it good for? This time, it is Falls Count Anywhere in a match that, quote, cannot be stopped for any reason, unquote. You know who's not going to be very happy about that? That Dan whatever the fuck his name is on that WWE bump show, the one who defended that Hell in a Cell finish against comparisons to The Undertaker and Mankind's Hell in a Cell match by saying, oh, it's 2019. You see, in 2019, you can argue your way out of shit booking by just pointing out what year it is. In fact, you could just apply that same logic in life and pretty much explain your way out of any situation that you find yourself in. Change lanes on the road without signaling and slam into the car next to you. Hey, calm down, brother. It's 2019. That's what you have insurance for. My girlfriend finds out that I've been sleeping with her best friend. Oh, hey, baby. Why are you getting so bent out of shape about, huh? It's 2019. Come on. That's just how it is. SmackDown loses 1.4 million viewers in the span of 3 weeks. Well, it's 2019. Ratings don't matter. Haven't you heard? So I'm sure Dan the comedian is very upset about this. I mean, what if The Fiend has an allergic reaction to all of this shitty booking? Now the match can't be stopped. He could die in there. His career may die if he loses this match. Hey, keep in mind, they never said the countouts or disqualifications don't count as falls. And if you're asking, well, how does one get counted out if falls count anywhere? This is WWE. They'll figure out a way. After all, it's 2019. Seth also attacked Mr. Rogers Wyatt on Raw, set fire to the Firefly Funhouse, killing Ramblin' Rabbit, according to Bray on Twitter, in what he called a super unnecessary, cruel arson attack. The live crowd booed the shit out of Rollins for doing this. What a babyface. What a great babyface. You know, Seth Rollins just does not know when to quit. He got into a couple of Twitter exchanges this week with people about the finish to the Hell in a Cell match. He got one tweet. He just will not let this die. You know, maybe if he just didn't say anything about it, it would go away. But he couldn't help himself. He got one tweet from a person saying, "Is the Falls Count Anywhere championship match between Bray Wyatt and Seth Rollins going to end in a DQ?" I mean, their Hell in a Cell match did. SMH. Shaking my head. Rollins then replied, "Correction. It ended in a ref stoppage. When a body isn't moving, the official has to make the right call." And he's right, it was a stoppage. It was not a DQ, as if that somehow makes it better. And he has taken a lot of flack for that finish, even though I can't imagine he came up with it himself. He didn't script that out himself. It didn't come from his brain. But he's the one getting a lot of shit for that finish, so I don't know why he doesn't just leave well enough alone. Someone then replied with a gif of Undertaker chokeslamming Mankind through the top of the Hell in a Cell. And Rollins had this to say to this person. He said, "I imagine Mick and Taker might have liked the ref to stop the match there. Might have added a few more years to Mick's incredible career. Just a thought." Well, you can't say that he didn't set himself up for this response. From Sully Mongrel on Twitter, "I'm sure Sting would have liked the ref to stop the match he had against you, too." Yowie wowie, Seth's deactivating his Twitter again right about nowie. That was really mean, actually. The guy said was really mean. And I know Seth feels bad about that, and Sting has said, you know, it's not Seth's fault, don't blame him, but still. Holy shit, what a reply. So with the arsonist, or the architect, Seth Rollins now defending his title, he has stepped down as the captain of Team Brother Jack Dude at Crown Jewel. And replacing him on Team Hogan will be Roman Reigns. It will now be Roman Reigns, Rusev, Ricochet, Chad Gable, and Mustafa Ali taking on Team Flair, consisting of Randy Orton, King Corbin, Bobby Lashley, Shinsuke Nakamura, and a partner to be named. Ali, by the way, sounds so excited to be part of Team Hogan. He tweeted a photo of Hogan, and next to him he tweeted a photo of himself with the caption, "A real American and Hulk Hogan. I've been added to Team Hogan on 1031 at Crown Jewel." I'm being sarcastic. He doesn't sound very excited about this at all. But he did tweet again later to say, to clarify some reports, "My earnings from the October 31st event will be donated to charitywater.org, which brings clean drinking water to people in need around the world." So, good guy, Ali. Yeah, he also found out about this little kid who wanted to dress up like him for Halloween. But WWE has no Ali costumes, so he had one personally made to mail to the kid's family. And the mask lights up just like Ali's mask lights up, the whole deal. That locker room is better for having somebody like him in it. If there are any beneficiaries from this draft, and that's a big if, I hope Ali is one of them. Also announced for the Crown Jewel show, what they are calling the largest tag team turmoil match in history to determine a World Cup winner to crown the best tag team in the world. Vince and Shane McMahon. No, they're not officially announced. Not yet, anyway. There's still time. The teams are Ziggler and Rude, Viking Raiders, New Day, Revival, Heavy Machinery, Lucha House Party, Hawkins and Ryder, the OC, and the B Team. Now, just to round out this draft, here are the Raw picks in the order in which they were selected on Monday night. Going to Monday Night Raw are the current Raw champion, Universal Champion Seth Rollins, Charlotte Flair, Andrade with Zelina Vega, Asuka and Kairi Sane. So I guess the women's tag team titles can still be defended on both Raw and SmackDown, but if and when they lose them, Asuka and Kairi will be exclusive to Monday Night Raw. That's the idea behind it anyway. Rusev, Aleister Black, Cedric Alexander, Humberto Carrillo, Eric Rowan, Buddy Murphy, former WWE Champion Jinder Mahal, 24/7 Champion R-Truth, Samoa Joe. Yes, Samoa Joe was chosen after all these other people. He is out hurt, though. He does have a thumb injury. I don't know when he's due back. He is on the injury reserve. Akira Tozawa, Shelton Benjamin, Rey Mysterio, Titus O'Neil, and Liv Morgan. As I suspected, Liv Morgan goes to Monday Night Raw, and perhaps we'll actually have a chance to see her soon on TV and see what this whole character revamp is, or they could just completely forget about what they teased all those months ago, and she'll just come back as her old self. Knowing WWE, that's probably exactly what happens. Now, the SmackDown picks in the order in which they were selected. SmackDown selects WWE Champion, SmackDown Champion Brock Lesnar, all three members of New Day, Daniel Bryan, Bayley, Shinsuke Nakamura with Sami Zayn, Mustafa Ali, Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler, Carmella, who is now split apart from R-Truth, The Miz, King Corbin, your King of the Ring, relegated to a fifth-round draft pick, Chad Gable, and Elias. Now, these are the undrafted names. These were the undrafted free agents who we found out on Twitter days later have now been signed, either by Raw or SmackDown, and they go like this. Cesaro. Yes. Cesaro went undrafted by either show, which I thought had to be part of some kind of storyline where he would end up taking his services to NXT or to NXT UK. But nope. And look, I get that he doesn't win a lot of matches on TV. That's just the way he's booked. But for all the talk by the announcers about, oh, how freakishly strong and athletic he is and the titles he's won in the past, the Andre Battle Royal, which we all know means shit anyway, but I'd like to think it means something. All of those things, like kayfabe-wise, there's no reason a guy like him should go undrafted in favor of some of the other names that did get picked. It's ridiculous. He's also going to Saudi Arabia, Cesaro is, to wrestle. Mansoor, however it's pronounced. Mansoor, I'll tell you this much, Mansoor could not ask for a better opponent to be in the ring with. Mansoor is actually really good. We haven't seen a lot of him in NXT. He's actually really good, so I think that could be a hell of a match. But Cesaro's in that match for one reason and one reason only, to make Mansoor look good in his home country. So I'm sure that match is going to get over great on that show. Also headed to SmackDown is Luke Harper, so the Rowan and Harper team is already done. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, Dana Brooke, and Drake Maverick. And coming to Monday Night Raw, the Iconics, Sarah Logan, Zack Ryder, Kurt Hawkins, No Way Jose, and another Andre Battle Royal winner, Mojo Rawley. On the WWE Backstage preview on FS1, we got a taste of what this WWE Backstage show is going to be. It doesn't actually debut officially until November 5th, but it aired on FS1 after the baseball game the other night. I saw parts of it. I tuned out pretty quickly. I cannot see this being something I'm going to stick with every week. They had Triple H on to announce, because they had been promoting the idea that there's a blockbuster trade. You've got to find out. You got to tune in to find out what this big blockbuster trade is between Raw and SmackDown. And this was going to be revealed on the show. Well, this big blockbuster trade turned out to be Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross being traded to SmackDown in exchange for Raw getting future draft pick consideration. Which can be translated as, they realize the women's roster on SmackDown is ridiculously thin. They have almost no baby faces. They have Bayley, Sasha, Carmella, Lacey Evans, Mandy and Sonya. Ember Moon is apparently out with an Achilles injury, so she may be gone for many months before we see her back on TV. And that's it. Take Ember out, and Carmella is the only babyface that they had up until a few days ago. Although I guess now they signed Dana Brooke, who I think is a babyface, I believe. Is she a babyface? I don't even know anymore. But now they have Nikki and Alexa to help balance things out. Alexa Bliss is going to end up being positioned as the star of that SmackDown division. It may take a few months, but you know that they're going to do that. This time she'll be a babyface instead of a heel like last time. But I don't know that there's been anybody who's been called up who has had more success in titles and television time than Alexa Bliss. That's the role they obviously see her in. So in due time, I'm sure she will be positioned as the number one lady on SmackDown. As full-timers go on the brand, you've got Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, Braun Strowman, The New Day, Shinsuke Nakamura, King Corbin, and Chad Gable. That they are the group of more focused on talent that they have on SmackDown. Not counting Brock Lesnar, who only shows up a few times a year. Not counting The Fiend, who should not be on the show every single week. I'm not saying that Raw has an all-star team, But with a roster like that, I laugh. I laugh when I hear people still say that they should bring back brand-specific pay-per-views. There is a reason they stopped doing the brand-specific shows, because they died a death. And they'll die again. I look at these rosters right now, and Raw has the edge. Not overwhelmingly so. SmackDown has some names I like, but the Raw roster right now is the stronger of the two. But they've got a lot of talented people right now on that roster. They've had talented people on that roster for years, and they still find a way to make these shows boring. The draft that we really needed was behind the scenes. Eric Bischoff got fired, and he was the SmackDown guy. People think Paul Heyman is going to be the savior of Monday Night Raw. If these last few weeks are a window into what we can expect, then Raw may just be a lost cause. One name not involved in the draft was Mike Kanellis, who asked for his WWE release this week, just 4 months after signing a new 5-year deal with the company. So, having buyer's remorse, it seems. Unfortunately for him, he is no longer under warranty, so I don't think there's much he can do. I'll bet WWE was having some buyer's remorse once they found out that Maria was pregnant again. But this is what he said. "Today I asked for my release from WWE. I want to thank everybody in the company who has helped me out and who I have shared a locker room with. I love you all. I've been with this company now for almost 3 years, and I am incredibly grateful for the opportunity. However, it is time for me to move on. I am only 34 years old, and I feel I have way too much left in the tank. Working one day a week is just not going to cut it for me. I came to WWE to work, and that opportunity does not exist right now. I re-signed with the company back in June because I thought it was what was best for my family, and maybe from a financial standpoint, it was. But I quickly realized that bringing my work frustrations and misery home with me is not good for my family, and I no longer want my daughter to constantly see me come home defeated, sad, and angry. It's not fair to her or my wife. Being a pro wrestler was and is my lifelong dream, and I'm just not ready to give that up yet. I wasted 4 years of my life addicted to drugs and not caring when I should have been having the best matches of my life. Now that I am clean, sober, and motivated, I want to have those 30-minute matches. I want to travel the world and wrestle in front of UK crowds, German crowds, Japanese crowds. I want to feel the love and excitement that wrestling once gave me. I also want my daughter to be able to see me wrestling. I want her to see her daddy work for his money. I've never been okay with just collecting a paycheck, and I cannot in good conscience tell my daughter that she has to work her ass off to get ahead in life and then not do it myself. I don't know what the future holds, but for the first time in a long time, I am hopeful and excited. Thank you to everybody who has ever supported me and had my back. I love you." Now, Mike's wife, Maria, posted on Instagram that she has not requested her release. This is just her husband. She supports her husband. She says, "Contrary to what people think, Mike never went to rehab, nor did WWE pay for it. Or if there was something like that, I guess it came before he came to WWE. I don't know if that, I mean, I'll take her word for it. Offhand, I don't know if that timeline matches up or not. But it's possible that's exactly what happened. I am of the belief that you guys know this because I talked about this with the Luke Harper situation. I am of the belief that if you have no plans for somebody, rather than just paying them to sit on the sidelines and do nothing, let them go if they want to go. If you have nothing in mind for them, then let the guy go. Use him or lose him. That's how I feel about Luke Harper, who it looks like may be headed right back to the sidelines now that they've split him and Rowan up in the draft. But in this case, it is very hard for me to have any sympathy for this guy. He knowingly and willingly signed a 5-year contract with this company in June. After all this time doing next to nothing with this guy, and he knew that, there was no indication that WWE had any real plans for him. And he signed the contract anyway. After jobbing him out on television, he still signed the new contract, which was said to be for a lot of money. Something like maybe $500,000 a year. And then he was put into a storyline on TV where he was completely emasculated and embarrassed. Then his wife gets pregnant. They do a storyline where she claims he's not even the father. You're not a real man. They almost got Maury Povich involved. So now, of course, surprise, surprise, he's had a change of heart and he wants to get the hell out of there and says, I just want to work. He was very diplomatic in his message. He was very complimentary because he has to be. Because he has to be. You think that's how he really feels? I mean, not that he's not grateful, but you think that's the extent of how he really feels about his treatment in WWE? Of course not. He's kissing ass. He's buttering up to them, hoping that they'll give him his release. He'll be a free man and he can go work wherever he wants to work. Well, that's not going to happen. The dude knew what he was getting himself into when he signed on the dotted line 4 months ago. Now he wants to travel the world. He probably wants to join his buddy Matt Taven back in Ring of Honor. That would be my guess. I'm finding it very hard, though, to have sympathy for this guy. There's no reason to believe that WWE was going to treat him any differently than they did before this. He made that choice. I would be shocked if they granted his request. After denying Luke Harper, the shitstorm that would create if they denied Luke Harper but they gave it to Mike Bennett. You can't pick and choose who you let go. You've got to have, look, you've got to have a uniform policy. I disagree with it most of the time. But if that's the policy, then WWE needs to stick to the policy. You can't play favorites here. You can't let this guy go but hold the other guy hostage. You can't do that. So, and I can understand him wanting to work more. Some people love wrestling. They just want to get in the ring and work. It doesn't matter if it's in front of 100 people or 10,000 people. They just want to get in the ring and work. I couldn't believe it when I read this week that his last house show match, his last live event match, was last October. 1 year ago. He's not even working house shows, this guy. Not because of any kind of injury or rehab or anything like that. They just haven't used him. But for God's sake, dude, you knew that going in. When you signed in June, you knew that. You knew in June that you hadn't wrestled the house show match since October. He chose, as he said in his note, financial security for his family, which is not a bad choice to make. When you're a husband and you're a father, those are the kinds of choices that you have to make. And he made that choice. And I can't blame him for making that choice, but you can't then turn around 4 months later and act surprised that the company isn't using you or be shocked and upset if they don't let you go. He made a choice, and now he's going to have to live with that choice. SmackDown on Fox was in Indianapolis this week. Twitter poll, over 3,200 votes, 34% thumbs up, 66% thumbs down. So a little bit better than Raw, but still not great numbers. I thought the matches were fine. It just felt paint by numbers shit. A largely dull show. They opened, there was an Intercontinental Championship match that was good for the time it lasted. Roman Reigns, Shinsuke Nakamura. There was a cool sequence or a spot here where Roman went for a Superman punch and it was countered by Nakamura into an armbar. I thought that was pretty cool. King Corbin interferes for the DQ. That led to the very predictable tag team match at the end of the show. So Roman Reigns and Nakamura each wrestled twice here on this show, pulling double duty. This formula of singles match ends on a DQ, which leads to a tag team match, is so overdone in this company. Like, if NXT did it once, or AEW did it once, fine. If WWE did it once, fine. Every now and then, okay. It feels like they do it, if not every week, at least three times a month. It's ridiculous. But I will say this. It looks as though, from what we saw on this show, that we could be headed for a program between Daniel Bryan and Shinsuke Nakamura for the Intercontinental Championship. We have still, to this day, after all these years of these two being in the company together at the same time, and part of that time, Bryan was, he was retired. But we have still yet to get a proper program between Bryan and Nakamura. And I don't know if Bryan still feels the same way he did 3 or 4 years ago when he made that comment that, who's your favorite wrestler right now in the entire world? And he said Shinsuke Nakamura. I don't know if that's still true. I don't know if he has a new favorite wrestler. But I'm sure he would love to work with Nakamura. So if we end up getting that program, I'm on board for that. I think that's pretty cool. So we'll have to see. That was the impression I got just from watching this show. The other thing that I noticed, and other people picked up on this as well, there was a backstage segment with New Day and Heavy Machinery. It was a total comedy segment. But, we had Tucker talking to Kofi and talking to Xavier and talking to Big E. And he was saying, we want to cheer you guys up, especially, you know, you, Kofi, after losing the world championship, we want to just kind of cheer you up. And Kofi had a pancake in his hand. And as he's responding to Tucker and saying, man, it's all good, man. I got the power of positivity. If you look at his hand, he was crumpling the pancake. He turned it into pancake dust. Just squeezed it and destroyed the pancake in his hand. And it was one of those little subtle things that gives me some hope that they are recognizing how foolish it was, by the way, to not have any kind of real reaction from Kofi coming out of that championship loss to Brock Lesnar. And now they're going to play it up for... And I don't know if it leads to a Kofi breakdown. I don't know if it leads to a Kofi heel turn. And he splits from the New Day. Or maybe a temporary thing like that. And the New Day has to try to, you know... They spend months of New Day trying to convince Kofi to come away from the dark side and come back to us. Kofi, it's going to be okay. I mean, they could go in a lot of interesting directions with this. And it would make Kofi Kingston infinitely more interesting than him just being the third member of New Day chucking pancakes into the crowd and gyrating his hips. So I hope that there is an idea here. And it wasn't just a little subtle thing that they stuck in there for 1 week. And I'm not sure everybody picked up on that, but I definitely noticed that. And the rest of the show, you know, there was... I don't even think Kofi was on the rest of the show. There was nothing. But it was one of those little things that you pick up on and you hope, okay, maybe this is going to lead to something interesting. The Shorty G stuff. I have to talk about this. There was a match. They gave him a quick win over Curtis Axel. And then Caleb Braxton gets in the ring to interview him. And they're talking about the fact that, yeah, everybody's been calling you short. They've been short-shaming him. And he cuts this promo. Look, I guess he did the best with it that he could. It's not like he's writing his own shit. They're writing this garbage for him. And he's talking about how, I'm short. I'm not the tallest guy, but I embrace it. I accept who I am. And the people who mock me, you know, they're just insecure about themselves. I am Shorty Gable. And then he stops himself and he says, no, you know what? I'm Shorty G. So there you go. All the internet reports from a month ago turned out to be 100% true. They're going with this Shorty G bullshit. The Shorty G stuff was almost enough for me to give this entire show a thumbs down. That's how much this irritated me. He's not even the smallest guy in the company right now. You would think this guy was like 5 feet tall. He's 5 feet eight. The way they talk about him, you would think he was one of the lollipop kids from The Wizard of Oz. This was just awful dialogue. You know what this reminded me of? His speech here in the ring reminded me of that awful Nia Jax post-match promo at one of the pay-per-views last year. It might have been after she won the women's championship or... maybe she defended it. Maybe she defended it against Alexa for the first time. This was after WrestleMania. And she cut this like anti-bullying speech after she won the title. It sounded so forced. It sounded like it was supposed to be some kind of public service announcement. It wasn't even a promo. So that's kind of what this reminded me of in a way. So to get television time and to get a spot on Hulk Hogan's team in Saudi Arabia, I guess this is the price that had to be paid. Because we are seeing more of Gable now than we ever have before on television. He's getting TV time, which is a good thing. And is he going to get the gimmick over? I think he could. Because I know he's got a comedic side to him. We saw it with him and Jason Jordan in NXT. We really haven't had a chance to see that side of him much on the main roster. That's one of the reasons I made the comparisons to Kurt Angle. It wasn't just that they're both former Olympians and he's got the singlet and the ankle lock. The moonsault. I mean, there's a lot of similarities between Chad Gable and Kurt Angle. But Kurt, when he first came in, you knew he could go, but he was playing up the comedy. And that's what we were seeing with Gable in NXT. So I know he's got it in him. Can he make this work? Can he get over to any meaningful degree with it? It's going to be very tough, I think. But we'll see. He's going to have his chance. This could be his only shot. This is the kind of gimmick that can ruin an entire career. This is going to go one of two ways. This is going to just get over like gangbusters, and he's going to play it up for total comedy, but he's going to get over in the process. Or he's going to crash and burn, and his career is going to flame out because of it. This only goes one of two ways. But that's the price that had to be paid. For the record, I think this Shorty G shit needs to go die in a fire. I am not calling him Shorty G after this week. This is a Shorty G-free zone going forward on this podcast. He is Chad Gable. He has a fucking name. He could get over just as easily as Chad Gable if they are going to play it up for comedy. You could have had Chad Gable doing comedy. That would be like having Kurt Angle when Kurt Angle came in. Oh, we got to get this guy over. He's just a wrestler. I mean, that's not going to get over. They were coming out of the Attitude Era. They were still in the Attitude Era. When Kurt Angle came along, you would think, if anything, they would look at a guy like him, an amateur wrestler. That's not going to get over. We've got to give this guy a funny name. You know? I don't even know what name they could have possibly given him. Some ridiculous, stupid name. No, he was Kurt Angle. And he got over, just like Chad Gable could get over. Could take your Shorty G shit and stick it up your ass. Ms. TV, Bayley and Sasha Banks. He's interviewing Bayley, and Bayley is talking about the fans. You know, when I lost my women's championship, I was there for everybody. I did, and I gave, and I gave, and all you people did was take, take, take. And where was my hug when I needed it? Where was my hug? Where was my support? And she ended her promo by basically borrowing the Vince McMahon line from SmackDown many years ago. Might have been 19 years ago, 20 years ago on SmackDown. Life sucks, and then you die. In fact, that Life Sucks and Then You Die promo, I think, was on my list of the top 8 or 9 best promos in WWE history. That was such a great promo. Unfortunately, Bayley does not have the delivery of Vince McMahon, so if you run the two segments side by side, you can see how awful this was. But I'm very happy that we're seeing a different side of Bayley. This has been long overdue. Nikki Cross came out, and a bunch of women came out to preview this six-pack challenge they were going to have to determine a number one contender. Nikki Cross won the match over Carmella, Dana Brooke, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, and Lacey Evans to earn a shot at Bayley's championship, so that's the next program. We had a squash, total squash. Drew Gulak making his SmackDown debut. He's back to doing the PowerPoint slides. This is main roster Drew Gulak. This is not the Drew Gulak from NXT or 205 Live, the shooter, as I call him. I called him the Dean Malenko of WWE, but I meant that in a good way when Malenko was doing his thing in the cruiserweight division in WCW. And that works for Gulak. And that was the Gulak I enjoyed watching. And I can see that will not be the case on the main roster, but this was not designed to get him over. This was meant to be a squash for Strowman going into the match with Tyson Fury. I question why it had to be Gulak in there. Of all the warm bodies sitting in the back, probably in catering, fucking around on their phones, why did it have to be Drew Gulak out here? But this is apparently how it's going to be for him on the main roster. And then we had Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan over Baron Corbin and Shinsuke Nakamura. So I'm still wondering here, when do we get the inevitable match? Because I still think this match is going to happen, whether there's a turn, whether it's babyface against babyface. I still say all roads lead to Roman Reigns one-on-one with Daniel Bryan. This little friendship of theirs is going somewhere. It ain't going to last forever. So the question is, when do they do the match? You know, do they do it at the Royal Rumble? Can they extend it all the way to WrestleMania? I think actually WrestleMania would not be a bad idea. I think it'd be a hell of a match. And more importantly, it would keep Roman Reigns away from another match with Brock Lesnar. Or they could just end up doing what WWE would do here, which is give us the exact same build to WrestleMania 31 and have Roman beat Bryan en route to a championship match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. What's old is new again. Oh my goodness. You know, if Bryan is back to being a babyface for good, and it's not just a temporary thing, and, you know, he'll go heel again, and we'll get evil, hippie, vegan Daniel Bryan. If he is back to being a babyface, I would love for him to be the one to take the title away from Brock Lesnar. But this time, do it the right way. David versus Goliath. Tell that story. Bryan is the babyface. Lesnar is the heel. They had a great match last year at Survivor Series, but they were both heels. Bryan had just turned heel on TV the week before. He low-blowed AJ Styles, beat the piss out of him. Bryan versus Lesnar is a WrestleMania main event all these years later still that I can get behind. Now, Game 3 of the World Series airs on Fox this Friday between the Astros and the Nationals. So, for one night only, SmackDown is being bumped over to FS1. This could be a sign of their future if these ratings go down anymore. They're promoting a face-off between Brock Lesnar and Cain Velasquez, and appearances by Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair, who picked up 500,000 viewers for their last appearance on Raw. So I'm sure Fox would love to get a segment with Hogan and Flair, but it's going to have to be on FS1 this week. They're in sweet Saudi promotion right now. That looks to be what SmackDown is going to be all about this upcoming Friday. Wednesday Night War head-to-head. The good news for AEW is they topped NXT in viewers for the third straight week. And they also stayed over 1 million viewers on TNT. The bad news is they were down, both shows were, for the second straight week. Now, when you factor in the airing on True TV for AEW the week before, AEW did about 1.1 million viewers in total. This week, they fell slightly to a little over 1 million, but that is a drop of over 400,000 people since their debut. That's almost 30% of its audience from its debut gone. NXT, meanwhile, was down from 790,000 viewers on USA to 712. They have fallen every single week since the head-to-head battle started. I would be a lot more worried about the future of NXT on USA than I am the future of AEW. Now, on my Wednesday Night Dynamite stream, I mentioned the match between Riho and Britt Baker for the AEW Women's Championship. I said the two of them did not seem to be on the same page at all. I went back and I watched it again, and I feel the same way now that I did then. They just did not click at all. The match was not good. You know, and I gotta say, I've not seen much from Britt Baker so far. I know she's kind of being positioned and pushed as one of the more featured stars of that women's division. I could see why. Oh, she's a dentist by day and a wrestler by night. It's a cool story. But you know, I don't know. I'm not seeing it so far. I know she hasn't had a lot of matches, a lot of singles matches anyway, in AEW yet. She's been in some tags. There's been some multi-person matches. There was a battle royal. Maybe I just need to go back and watch some of her indie work. I don't know. There's just something's off. And I stand by my assertion that she needs to be a heel. She comes off to me every time I see her on television, even when she was in the booth with JR and Shivani and everything. There was a certain attitude. I don't know if it was by design or what. She just comes off as being very heelish to me. Plus, she's a dentist who tries to pry open people's mouths during her matches. And who doesn't hate their dentist? I mean, come on. She's a heel. Then there was Marco Stunt. Marco Stunt replaced the Luchasaurus, who tore his hamstring or suffered some kind of a hamstring injury. I hope, however, whatever it is, I hope it's not that serious. On his Facebook page, Marco Stunt said that Luchasaurus got hurt 2 hours before the show was to begin. And thankfully for them, they had called him to come in to wrestle this week on AEW Dark. So when the injury happened, on 2 hours' notice, they were able to slot him into the Luchasaurus' place. So on 2 hours' notice, this kid made his national TV debut against, as he called them, maybe the best tag team in the world today, in the Lucha Bros. Now, this did not anger me the way that it angered, clearly upset a lot of people. I mean, I got people, you know, copying me on Jim Cornette's stuff. Jim Cornette would be upset if he stubbed his toe. I mean, you tell me that Jim Cornette is upset about something, I'd tell you that the sky is fucking blue and grass is fucking green. You know, you don't have to tell me that, I can just assume. But there were a lot of people who were very upset and very offended, and other podcasters and people who were very upset by this. Look, I enjoyed watching Pentagon wrestle Io Shirai and Kairi Sane in Lucha Underground because those ladies are badass. But I know a lot of people did not like that match either, and I'm not a huge fan of the intergender stuff, but I enjoyed that. Well, there were a lot of people that didn't. They didn't like that match either. They could not accept Pentagon in a match selling for three women. Here, Marco Stunt took the loss for his team, as he should have, so it was the right outcome. Yes, watching him in this match, it looked like child abuse. But on short notice, you know, and no, I did not do that on purpose, but on short notice, he went in there. They gave him a few hope spots. The crowd was into it. They were behind him. And in the end, he lost. They did their finish, and he lost. So I don't really see what the big deal is here. The guy who was supposed to be in the match is a fucking monster. He is a beast, but he was hurt 2 hours before the show. So what the hell are they supposed to do? They have a tag team tournament match. This was not some random match. They just could have changed the whole thing or made it a six-man. This was a match in the tag team championship tournament. They had to do something. Marco Stunt's not in there wrestling for the heavyweight title. He was in there to take the fall. But my God, you know, people and podcasters, they all need to chill the fuck out. So Jurassic Express is out of the tag team tournament. I had picked Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy to win the entire thing. Not Jungle Boy and his little brother. So it doesn't count. That's my story. My prediction didn't come true, but you can't hold it against me. Can't hold it against me. You had an injury. So just throw it out. Well, one of our listeners, David, was at the show. He was at the AEW show in Philadelphia. He sent in a report, so I wanted to share part of that with you here. He said, all the members of the Elite were extremely over. It was interesting to note that my girlfriend and I went to the last Monday Night Raw in Philly before this year's WrestleMania. The crowd interaction there compared to this event was night and day. Funny enough, that was the same night that The Shield reunited for the final time. It was very bizarre to see Jon Moxley in an entirely different company only 6 months later in the same city. Dark matches were Nyla Rose against the Librarian, and there was also an eight-man tag involving Cody, Dustin, and the Young Bucks. Peter Avalon got some great heel heat, but unfortunately the match between Leva and Nyla was a stinker. The dynamic just is not clicking as they position Leva as a babyface and Peter as her heel manager, but Leva does nothing redeeming to make you cheer for her during the match. Yeah, you know, the women's matches, I have to say, have not really impressed me in AEW so far. They really haven't. They have not been the strongest point of these AEW shows. He says the eight-man tag was incredible. One of the highlights of the night came after the match when Cody was addressing the crowd. The Orange Cassidy Kid impersonator was in attendance, and Cody let him pin him. Well, don't show people that because they'll be very upset about that too. Actually, they did put the video up on YouTube. So if you are easily offended, though, by things like this, by all means, stay away. He says, this kid did not break character at all. Even as we were leaving the arena and saw him in the hallway, he was in full-on Orange Cassidy mode. I believe it was the kid's birthday, which is why they did what they did. If I had to critique anything, it would be more on the production side. It took them a while to get the video screen to show us what the cameras were filming. Audio was the biggest issue. We could barely hear what anybody was saying in their promos. Also, the audio for Cody's video package was downright inaudible. Moxley had a video package that literally had no audio, which prompted a "We can't hear you" chant from the crowd. I'm hoping with time they will polish this. The other critique would be the lack of clear explanation over heels and babyfaces. My girlfriend got into wrestling because of me, but mainly watches WWE. She understands who's good and who's bad. During the matches, it was hard for her to distinguish who was in which role. Sure, commentary does their part for the home audience, but I could also see a casual fan being turned off because they don't know who to root for. The only wrestler who played his part was Pac. You know you're supposed to boo him, and he wants you to boo him. All in all, I had a great time, and I would not hesitate to go to another AEW show. So that comes from David. I felt bad because I didn't take any phone calls on Wednesday, and he was going to call in, so I wanted to make sure I got his report in. Over on NXT, we had 8 matches in 2 hours. Actually, less than 2 hours if you take out the commercial breaks on this week's show. 8 matches in less than 2 hours. That continues this trend, this formula of just throwing out match after match after match after match with very little in between. I like a good match as much as anybody, but come on. I mean, that's a bit much. Tommaso Ciampa saw his first action in months. He beat Angel Garza. This was Ciampa's big comeback after the match. Kyle O'Reilly, Undisputed Era, they come out. Kyle O'Reilly hands Mauro Ranallo, or throws at him, a thumb drive. A USB thumb drive. So they send the thumb drive to the truck to find out what's on there. And it's video that was shot earlier in the day of them laying out. And this was post-attack, so we didn't actually see the attack. But we see Velveteen Dream laid out in the back. And apparently this was done to cover for what is a legitimate back injury that Velveteen Dream has. He's going to be out for a while. I don't know how long. So we're not going to get that North American title rematch this Wednesday between Dream and Roddy. Instead, we were told, Roderick Strong would defend the North American Championship against the winner of the rubber match between Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic. They were having a fine match, which I think would be impossible for them not to. When Roddy interfered, he attacked both of them for a no contest. Match went about 15 minutes. He thought he was being real slick. William Regal said that he would have to defend his championship instead against both men this week in a triple threat match. I also, I'm watching this and I wonder if we are heading for another Undisputed Era War Games match at TakeOver next month with Keith Lee and Dijakovic ending up on the same team as Babyfaces. Maybe Finn Balor joins them, Tommaso Ciampa. So we have Balor, Ciampa, Lee, and Dijakovic as a team against Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. That's one idea. They could do what they did the first year they did War Games and make it a three-way. I'm not a big fan of that, but they could do a three-way and throw Imperium in there from NXT UK since they've been making appearances on TV. So that you would have Imperium, Undisputed Era, and then Ciampa, Balor, Lee, and Dijakovic. Can't tell me that wouldn't be a hell of a match. I kind of wish they could work Pete Dunne in there somehow, but I don't know where he fits. And then they can go in a totally different direction. I was thinking about this too. Because there's a lot of women on this brand, and there's a lot of women's feuds, and a lot of them based around Shayna Baszler. But maybe they go in a totally different direction, and they do a women's War Games match for the first time. Because you know WWE, they love their first time evers. First ever women's Hell in a Cell, first ever women's WrestleMania main event. So they could do the opposite and have the first ever women's War Games match because they have enough women for it right now if they wanted to, who could challenge Baszler and the Horsewomen, maybe throw Io Shirai in there as a partner with the heels. And then you've got Candice LeRae, you've got Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Tegan Knox, Dakota Kai. You can choose from all of them as potential teammates. I don't think we should be seeing multiple War Games matches on one show, so it would have to be one or the other. And I'm torn because either one of them I think would be fun. But what do you guys think? You know, if given the choice, one or the other, you can only have one War Games match to take over this year. Would you do the War Games slot? You know, who would you give it to? Would you give it to the men? Or would you give it to the women? Imperium was on this show. They got a win over Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan. Io Shirai got a nice little squash win over Caden Carter, the former Lacey Lane. Matt Riddle beat Bronson Reed. Big Bronson Reed, over 350 pounds of him. Reed's a big dude. And Riddle powerbombed him. And then rolled through. He rolled him through and hit the knee strike. I thought that was impressive. Riddle gets the win. Tegan Knox, in what I believe was mentioned as her first NXT appearance in ring since coming back from her exploding knee injury. She's got two knee braces on because she's had ACL tears in both knees. So she walks out there. She looks like the bionic Stone Cold version of... or I guess she's kind of like the female version of a bionic Stone Cold with the two knee braces. So she got a win over Tainara. And after the match, Dakota Kai came out. Good friend of Tegan's. They hugged at ringside. Tegan was about to be interviewed. Shayna Baszler, Marina Shafir, Jessamyn Duke came out to interrupt. And Shayna said, I know, you know, Tegan, you want to throw your name into the title picture here in NXT. Because she wanted to throw down. Tegan said, let's do it. Shayna said, you've got to earn your way. You've got to earn yourself a championship match. You don't get gifted one here in NXT. And she made a crack. Hey, you know, talk to your friend Dakota. Dakota knows what it's like to be in the ring with me. So I love that they're keeping that issue alive. I thought this was going to be the spot where Rhea Ripley came out. Because Rhea Ripley, has challenged Shayna Baszler as well. And we could have gotten this very tense, awkward little standoff between Tegan Knox and Rhea Ripley. Because there's some unfinished business there as well. When Tegan got hurt, it was in a match with Rhea. And Rhea mocked her mercilessly on social media after that. In fact, I think for Halloween last year, she dressed up as Tegan Knox. And she had her leg in a brace and she had a crutch. I shouldn't laugh, but I thought it was fucking hilarious. So There's still unfinished business there between them. I could see them as unwilling partners if they were going to be on the same team in like a War Games match. So that's what I mean. You can do War Games with the men or the women, and I think either way it works. Killian Dane got a very quick win over Boa, and then we had Damian Priest in the main event getting a win over Pete Dunne. This was the best WWE match, I thought, on television all week. I thought this was a really good match. Obviously, they're giving the big push to Damian Priest right now. He's got the look, he's got this great entrance, he's big, he's tall, but he's also really good. Anybody who watched Punishment Martinez, any of his work in Ring of Honor, knows, he's very good. So he's not some big guy lumbering around the ring doing the same three or four moves. We saw more out of him in this match against Pete Dunne than at any other point since he's debuted. And I really enjoyed this match. I didn't have a problem with Dunne taking the loss because they're trying to get over Damian Priest right now. You know, Pete Dunne will be fine. It was a competitive match. So that was NXT. NXT continues to be a very good show. It's just, you know, match. There's got to be some more variety in there. And as I said last week, you know, the whole two-hour thing, it is more of a slog now to go through the show because there's just so much. It feels like, maybe on paper there really isn't, but it feels like there's so much more now to get through. And there's just only so many hours in the week. But I still think NXT is an excellent show. Audible is offering listeners of this podcast one free audiobook as part of a 30-day trial. All you have to do is use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can sample the service for 30 days. There's a ton of wrestling books on there to choose from. Rocky Johnson, Soul Man. Rocky Johnson just came out with a book. His son, The Rock, wrote the foreword for it. That's on Audible right now. Daniel Bryan, Chris Jericho, Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan in the fiction section. All these books are available for free. One. Pick one, and you get it for free. And even if you cancel your trial, you get to keep the book. It is yours. audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You get a free book, and you are supporting the podcast when you do so. Things exploded out into the open this week. This is very sad. In fact, this entire segment wins for sad tweet this week. Between Jeff Hardy's wife, Beth, and Matt Hardy's wife, Rebby. And even Matt himself chimed in on the situation with his brother Jeff after his recent DWI arrest, his second alcohol-related arrest this year. Matt posted on Twitter a few weeks ago the comment that he was asked multiple times by multiple people about his brother's arrest, which is one of the reasons why I'm sure he is just delighted every time his brother gets into trouble because people come to him asking questions. So he made a comment, and he said, "Since so many have asked me about my brother, I love my brother, and I want him to be happy and healthy. I've expressed that to him as much as I can. Jeff has to make his decisions about his life. I have to focus on my two boys and my soon-to-arrive son. I can only control my actions." And when I first talked about the Jeff Hardy arrest and the whole story, I mentioned that tweet, and I feel for Matt. I feel for, you know, him being put in that situation. I didn't think there was anything wrong with the tweet. I'm sure he is very concerned about his brother. And that was his statement. He was just being honest. He says, "Look, you know, I love my brother, but look, I got my own family I got to worry about." So I didn't see anything wrong with what he said. Well, Jeff's wife, Beth, she posted on Twitter this week. I don't know what prompted this, if somebody tweeted her or what, but she said, "Kept my mouth shut for too long. Don't take any information seriously from, quote, family when it comes to me or Jeff. Family, quotes, are BS. Family should have contacted us first before they made a statement to Twitter. Looks like they're more worried about their online presence than Jeff. Jeff and I are handling our business, hence no posts from either of us about what happened. Going forward, if you don't hear from us, disregard it. We don't need any well wishes from family." Well, Rebby Hardy was not going to take this lying down. And she responded, I always have to put on a flak jacket when I see that Rebby Hardy has responded to something like this. I don't want to get hit by any shrapnel. She said, "Hi, neighbor. His handle is @MattHardyBrand. Also, we live 100 feet away. Pull the fuck up if you've got such an issue. No matter how much you dislike him, Matt is still his brother. Here long before your ass and his family. Not, quote, family. Period. Any statements from Matt about Jeff don't need your approval. It ain't about you. I know it kills you to have anyone acknowledge that the facade of a perfect life you try to maintain is a fucking joke, but not everybody thinks the sun shines out of your asses. Beth, and not everyone wants to be complicit in your protecting and enabling of a man who is well on his way to killing himself or someone else. You're an idiot if you really believe Jeff's actions don't affect Matt. They do, and he has every fucking right to speak his mind about his own brother. Remember, he speaks from experience. Unlike you, we don't run and hide from our issues and pretend nothing is or was ever wrong in this house. Matt was the absolute worst, and I've seen how bad it can truly get. I know how this story ends if you don't fucking wake up already. Worry about that instead of what is said to fucking nobodies online, as she called them, as you so eloquently describe their fans. It's not talking shit, it's living in reality and holding people accountable when they need it. Maybe it's time to put the whine emojis away, drop the Twitter stuntin', and put that energy into keeping your man from driving fucked up on the street I drive with my children, before trying to come at a man for addressing his own blood slash business partner. In short, and as always, mind your fucking business. So, she pretty much backed up everything I said about this a few weeks ago. Because I did get some comments from people when the clip went up on YouTube, you know, why are you hating on Jeff Hardy? You're just a hater. The man has a mental illness. You're a hater. Leave him alone. That does not mean that people turn a blind eye if he keeps getting himself in trouble by getting behind the wheel of a car and putting other people's lives in danger. It became a public matter when TMZ reported it. There was a police report. This is all public. So I and you and everybody else have as much a right as anybody to give our opinion and comment on it. And Rebby is absolutely 100% right. She has every reason to comment and be concerned about a guy who is getting behind the wheel of a car and putting other people's lives in danger. They live in the same neighborhood. She said we live 100 feet away from us. We could be on the road traveling the same roads as Jeff. He's putting me and my kids' lives in danger. So I agree with her 100%. Then there was a fan who responded, defending Matt and Rebby, said, y'all say Rebby should have kept it private. Rebby wasn't the one calling out family on Twitter. It makes me sad that this is happening, but it's what alcoholism does to a family. Matt chimed in, agreeing, and said, correct. I've been with Jeff since day one, literally. I've been involved in a professional capacity with him for 28 years, one in which our actions affect each other. I don't need permission to address my brother, my business. Wrestling is not important now. My brother's health is. So all of this adds up to a very bleak situation. Clearly, Jeff Hardy is still having issues that have plagued him off and on, mostly on, going back. I mean, it's got to be over a decade now. I mean, we were hearing stories about Jeff going back even to the early 2000s. It may have had something to do, in fact, with why he left WWE. You know, we're going back here to 2002, 2003 with some of these stories. So he's going through some shit right now. Matt and, you know, his wife are probably more aware of it than even any of us are. And they've now commented publicly and they've admitted it. And they said that maybe Jeff's wife ought to pay attention to her own business. That's not for me to say. But this idea that, you know, Matt would need permission or something to make a statement on Twitter. Get the fuck out of here. I mean, come on. It's the guy's brother. As he said, brother slash business partner. If he thinks that his brother's in a bad way and nothing's being done about it, he's got every right to go online and make whatever comment he wants to make. And, you know, Rebby obviously is a very opinionated person. She uses a very colorful vocabulary to get her point across. And can she be over the top? Sometimes, yeah. But you know what? In this case, I agree with everything that she said. I didn't see anything wrong here in this situation. And I hope that Jeff is going to get the help that he needs, but, you know, I mean, how many times have we said that over the years? You know, I just hope we don't hear another story about him getting behind the wheel of a 2,000-pound machine and putting other people's lives in jeopardy on the road, because there should be zero tolerance for that. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it poor judgment, you can call it mental illness, you can call it whatever you want. There should be zero tolerance for that kind of stuff. And Matt, from the sounds of it, he's very worried. He's very worried about where this may be headed. Time for this week's RSPW Rewind. There's been a lot of talk lately about WWE giving its fans an inferior product. Vince McMahon's influence and how out of touch he is. We hear about this all the time. I talk about it here on this podcast. Talent being wasted, all of these different things. So when I came across this post from so many years ago, I thought I would focus on one post this week, and this would be it. And it's eerie when you hear some of this, the comparisons that can be made between then and now. This post goes all the way back to March 28th, 1993, exactly 1 week before WrestleMania 9 at Caesar's Palace, a show that a lot of people dump on and consider to be the worst or one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. It is not the worst. It's not one of the best. I kind of have a soft spot for the show. And I'll tell you what, I've seen WrestleManias in the last 10 years that I think are far worse than what we saw at WrestleMania 9. It's hard to imagine forums like this even existing back then. We're talking about 1993. Outside of newsletters and hotlines. But on RSPW, Andrew S. Hall started a post with the title, Why the WWF Sucks. And this is what he had to say. I respect that someone may prefer WWF to Japanese wrestling. I am not a wrestling elitist, and I often enjoy gimmicks, angles, and general foolery. The WWF is pathetic, though. Scott, I don't know if it's Amon or Amon, we'll call him Amon. Scott Amon posted the results of a card in Cleveland. The results were identical in every way to the card that I saw in Columbus, even down to Doink ambushing Tatanka before the bell, and the match being postponed until later in the evening. Now, Doink doesn't bother me, and Tatanka is okay, but Vince completely insults wrestling fans by staging like this. The WWF, this is point number two, the WWF is even incompetent at executing its angles. Having Crush at a TV taping promoting vomiting voodoo and using every possible stereotype known to man, do not good gimmicks make? For every gimmick of sheer commercial genius like The Undertaker and The Million Dollar Man, we have Kamala, who now can't remember how to pin a person even though he has been in the WWF on at least two earlier occasions without having such trouble. Point number three. The booking in the WWF is pathetic. I swear this reads like something you would find at a forum today. We have continuous non-endings. We have a majority of matches that barely reach the 10-minute mark. We have no creativity with the matches. At the recent Columbus card, there was a great opportunity for some unplanned heat. Tatanka had some long leather lace dangling from his leggings that became wrapped. He kept having to pick it up and hold it in one hand when he would do things like jump off the top rope. Of course, this had no effect on the script. Not having a heel like Doink take advantage of this totally blows the match. Things like this ruin the WWF. You just sit there and go, I could do this so much better. In the end, that's really what ruins the WWF for people here on RSPW. And this discussion continued. There were lots of back and forth posts until Andrew replied to add some more on March 31st. These suggestions are precisely my point about why the WWF sucks. It's not that I hate its style of promotion, but that it is so horribly executed. If they could cap all the wacky angles and goofy stunts with some creative booking and good matches, I think nearly everybody would be happy. The way the WWF runs their promotion shows contempt for the fans. Maybe it's supposed to be for kids, but it shows contempt even for the kids. Unlike some WWF critics, I am not ordering WrestleMania. This is the first time that I will have had access to it and have not ordered it. Me and a couple of friends will rent the video when it comes out, though. Wow. This is like the 1993 version of I'm canceling my network subscription. Only we're going back, 26 years? I borrowed tapes of Smoky Mountain Wrestling from a friend, and that makes me dislike the WWF even more. Despite a much lower budget and really small roster of stars, they really go all out to put on good shows. They do a lot of things I dislike, such as too many screwjob endings and run-ins, but they do them so well that I still enjoy it. And I want you all listening to this right now to pay very close attention to this. This was not written in 2019. This was written in 1993. Okay, I want you to listen to this. Maybe people are too harsh on the WWF, but it is because of real frustration at all that wasted potential. With talents like the Harts, Michaels, DiBiase, Steiners, and even Doink, who have experience at putting on really good shows, there is no excuse for the shitty product that they put out. The basic reason is Vince McMahon. He wants McWrestling. The product will be the same regardless of where you go. It's really sad because he used to do better. He used to have regional feuds and regional interviews for house shows. I remember classics like the Bundy, Duke of Dorchester feud that only occurred in the Boston Garden. In a small defense of the WWF, there is worse. A local low-power TV station shows wrestling every night. On Monday, I saw IWCCW. Lord almighty, it is totally pathetic. The announcers are atrocious. I saw more missed moves than I've ever seen before, and the whole thing just had a really sleazy, cheesy feel to it. It was worse than Global. When I saw that part of his post about things never changing, wasted talent, Vince McMahon being the problem, you could have taken that post and slapped a 2019 timestamp on it. You could have slapped a timestamp on that for any year in the last 10 years. And I don't think people would have noticed the difference. The only difference is the names. Back then it was Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and DiBiase and the Steiners and Doink. So all you have to do is replace those names with the names on the roster today. Very eerie. But if you think this is a new phenomenon here, then this would prove otherwise. There were people saying the exact same things about Vince McMahon in 1993. On April 2nd, Mark the Gross Gladiator, Byrne, responded. After many months of watching nothing but old AWA and NWA / WCW wrestling videos, I finally decided to watch a current WWF video from my local video store. Yep. See, that's right, kiddos. We used to have these things called video stores back in the day. You had your Blockbuster Video, but you also had a lot of local mom-and-pop type shops. Vince Russo used to run two video stores when he first got involved in wrestling. Mark says, "My opinion is that the WWF has a more polished product to sell than the other leagues, but boy, do their gimmicks and wrestlers suck. I mean, this Razor Ramon character has got to be the worst wrestler I've ever seen, and yet he seems to be getting a major push. Why?" Well, I don't agree with Mark on that. Even worse is this fool with bright red hair who runs around pretending that he is an Indian. Tanaka or Tonka or something like that. He sucks. No skill, no brain, lousy gimmick, no brain. Jesus Christ. Wow. This guy's harsh. No skill, no brain, lousy gimmick, no talent, can't sell. The list seems endless. He makes the Warrior, who I like, great gimmick, look like a champion thoroughbred, and a talented wrestler whose physique is totally natural. Bring back Slick Rick and Muda, Mario Milano, still wrestling after 50 plus years, and the Funks. I admit that I like the bad guys and the whole idea of wrestling as a soap opera, but Vince McMahon has really been screwing up lately. His gimmicks are so boring. I mean, sure, a clown as a wrestler is a fun idea, especially when he makes fools of the faces, but this minority group thing he is totally doing really sucks big time. I know in America that jobs have to be given to minority groups in proportion to the population. Where is this going? To the population, but does this mean that Vince's next creation will be a gay sperm whale claiming land rights in the center of the ring at Madison Square Garden wrestling Bret Hart for the championship while sitting on Yokozuna? I have no idea what he is even talking about at this point. He seemed to kind of go off the rails at this point in the conversation. Why would a gay sperm whale be interested in land rights? And why would it be sitting on Yokozuna? Coincidentally, gay sperm whale claims land rights and sits on Sumo's face. would easily get 10 million views on Pornhub. See, it's all about how you title your video. I think that's a winning title right there. Speaking of Yoko Butt, this is his words, not mine. Speaking of Yoko Butt, a good angle that has not yet been discussed is a battle of the sumos with Yokozuna against John Tenta in a sumo-style match at WrestleMania 10 for the WWF Championship, both wearing the traditional nappies, trying to throw the other over the top rope. Imagine the impact that that would make. So it would seem that someone must have been paying attention to RSPW at the time, because we did get that sumo match between Tenta and Yoko the following year. But it was on Raw. It was not a WrestleMania for the championship, thank God. Now, I know I said I was only going to focus on that one post this week, but since I dropped Russo's name earlier, just scanning ahead in my doc here of all the posts that I've archived, I got enough material here to last me at least a few more months. So I do have another post here. I may as well share it now, since I don't know when another opportunity will come up for me to use this. Here is a post from July 16th of 2000. This was during Vince Russo's run in WCW. In fact, this would have been a week after the infamous Bash at the Beach incident with Russo and Hogan. A post titled, "I Met Vince Russo Today," from a user calling himself Froggy in the Meadow Under the Log. "I met Russo at the mall I work in this afternoon. He was shopping with his kids," kids with a Z at the end, "and walking around wearing a tank top trying to look all badass. Someone I work with told me there was some wrestling guy around the corner, and it turned out to be Vic Venom. I just shook his hand and I told him I really like what he's doing, which is funny because I would not have said that a few weeks ago. And I left it at that. Apparently when I was on break, he came into my shop and one of my coworkers said he was very rude. I met Terry Taylor in the same mall a few months back when he was still working for the WWF, eating in a chicken restaurant. Cannibalism?" I died at that ending. That's how the post ends. He ends the post with the word cannibalism and three question marks or something like that. Absolutely lost it when I saw that. So this has been your weekly reminder that people have thought Vince McMahon is out of touch and misusing his talent now for over 25 years. And NXT is currently employing a cannibal. Let's take some mailbag questions. You can always email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. We have an audio question from David in Chicago.
"Hey, Solomonster. My name is David Floyd, a.k.a. Deathblow, from Chicago. I got a question for you regarding AEW. Do you think they're giving away some of their good matches on AEW Dark? I heard that Kenny and Joey Janela match was pretty good, but do you think they should have saved that for their show or pay-per-view?"
They have to give some good matches away. You know, they're trying to establish the show as something must-see for people. That Omega-Joey Janela lights-out match was insane. I talked briefly about it at the beginning of my Dynamite review on Wednesday, and it generated a lot of discussion on social media. You know, I have to go back and see what kind of numbers that Dark episode did, but it got a lot of people talking and wanting to go watch AEW Dark that week. Plus, you know, most of what we see on the weekly show so far, when you watch Dynamite on TNT, so far what we see, everything is meant to be building to the pay-per-view in some way, to build the Full Gear coming up on November 9th. The Omega match really wasn't, you know, it was just Kenny Omega in a random match, hardcore match, against Joey Janela. And it went a long time. That match went over 25 minutes. So they probably felt that's a lot of TV time that can be spent on matches and angles that somehow tie into our next pay-per-view. I don't have a problem with it. I think it was smart for them to do that. I wouldn't get into the habit of giving away big matches every single week. But you got to throw a match in there like that every now and then if you want people to watch. You have to give people an incentive to watch that show on YouTube. We also have an audio question from Noah Mark.
Solomonster, oh Solomonster, it's me, Noah the Mark, and I have an audio question for you. And it's funny because Bray Wyatt just tweeted something similar to this, and I was thinking about asking you this. And my question is, here in 2019, how would you define the roles of a face and a heel? What is the definition of a face and a heel in 2019? Because I'm not really sure.
I don't think you can. There's no one definition for either one. I mean, those lines have been blurred so much. I don't even really know anymore what constitutes just a solid heel or a solid babyface. A year ago, I dug up this quote. Cody was asked about this on Twitter. Are you a heel or are you a face? What are you supposed to be? And his reply was, I'm just a wrestler. Those labels don't exist anymore. Crowd and context are different every single time. I disagree with this notion that those labels don't exist anymore. They do. I think they do. You know, it's to me, it's not unlike any Marvel movie you would go see where you have heroes and you have villains. That's how I have always looked at pro wrestling. In AEW, you look at somebody like an MJF, and you can see some truth in what Cody is saying. I can see why he would feel that way. MJF walks around as a prick. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He wakes up as a prick. He goes to bed as a prick. He eats breakfast as a prick, lunch, dinner. That's just who he is. But he calls Cody on TV his best friend, and he came to his aid 2 weeks ago when he was getting beaten up, and he got the biggest reaction of anybody on the show that night. But I read that live report that David submitted earlier that I read during the AEW portion of the podcast. He was at the show in Philly, and one of his criticisms was that his girlfriend, who is not a big wrestling fan, but she came along to watch, she was very confused by who to cheer for, who to boo, and he felt, his criticism of AEW was, he felt that they needed to do a better job of defining those roles. Otherwise, it can just muddy the crowd reactions, and you don't want to end up in a situation where people are sitting on their hands because they don't know who to get behind. I would define those roles as, and again, I don't have a clear-cut definition for you, but I would define them as a heel being somebody who, you know, takes shortcuts to win, who has qualities that make them genuinely unlikable, someone you don't want to see succeed, or someone you would gladly pay money to see them get their asses handed to them. Those are all definitions of what I feel make up a good heel or a good villain in wrestling. A good babyface is the opposite. It's somebody you naturally gravitate to, someone you enjoy watching. Maybe they have a great underdog story, or maybe they're not an underdog. Maybe they're the opposite. Maybe they're 6'8", 300 pounds, but they're fun to watch. They're cool. They make a connection in some way with the audience. You look forward to seeing them on your TV. You want to see them succeed. You want to see them be the champion. You know, Steve Austin, he blurred that line because he would cuss people out. He would flip them off. But he was the everyman. Black boots, black trunks, drinks beer, uses foul language. Who among us does not like doing all of these things? And people were able to relate to that. You know, he was being held down by his evil corporate overlords, something that people could relate to. In AEW, people can't necessarily relate to somebody in a dinosaur mask who's supposed to be 65 million years old, but he's befriended this kid more than half his size in Jungle Boy. He's almost like his protector in a way. People like Jungle Boy, and so they like Luchasaurus too. Plus, Luchasaurus is a great athlete who can do cool things in the ring that a guy that big shouldn't be able to do. So he's over. He's one of the most over acts, I think, in the entire company, and he has yet to make a single appearance on their TV show. But I agree that it's a lot harder to define those roles in wrestling today, and the number one reason that a lot of fans have rejected, I think, the top pushed baby faces in WWE, like Roman Reigns in the past, or right now Seth Rollins, he's starting to get that heat a little bit. Although Rollins doesn't get the boo bird treatment like Roman Reigns did or John Cena did. Not yet. But the reason is because it's the way they're booked. The things they say. They don't come off as cool. They don't come off as genuine. People can see right through that. They can see through terrible scripted shitty dialogue. They can see through bad booking. And unfortunately, the talents are the ones who end up paying for the sins of the promoter. Because Vince McMahon's going to just move on to the next guy, and he'll be around 10 years from now, 80-something years old, sitting in the gorilla position. But what happens if you screw up a Bray Wyatt? What happens if you screw up a Seth Rollins? What happens if you screw up a Chad Gable? They may never recover. Roman Reigns, he still gets booed. It's not as bad as it used to be. But he had years of this, and it wasn't even his fault. He was the product of poor decision making. He was the product of bad booking, bad timing with the whole Daniel Bryan thing, whatever it was. He paid a price. It was very unfair because it wasn't his fault. But it's true. The talent ends up paying for the sins of the promoter. And that's what we're seeing right now with Seth Rollins. He burned down the Firefly Funhouse. The Firefly Funhouse is one of the few segments people seem to enjoy on those shows. That's why he was booed out of the building at the end of the show last Monday. I also think it's a lot harder to be a good babyface than it is to be a good heel for two reasons. You're allowed a lot more latitude when it comes to being the bad guy on TV, but it's also really hard to find those stars that people can not only embrace, you know, like they did Daniel Bryan a few years ago or Kofi Kingston earlier this year, but to stay invested in those people. That's a very hard thing to do. People have a short attention span. There's only so much TV time. You go from one guy to the next. For somebody to latch on, for the audience to latch on to one person and to, you know, scream their asses off for them and you know, buy their merch and really support them and stick with them and not be fickle and turn on them in 3 months, that's a hard quality to find. That's very rare these days, but that's why someone like a Daniel Bryan stands out, because the people just took to him. And he could have been the next big thing. And then unfortunately for him, he got hurt. You know, his body betrayed him and he had to retire. And then he came back, which was a great story. And maybe now, maybe he can get back to that point. That's what I mean. I was talking earlier. I don't know if the idea is to still possibly turn him heel, what they're going to do with him and Roman Reigns, when they're going to finally have their match. But if he's back as a babyface for good, you can still, there's a story there that you can tell and you can get the people into it between Daniel Bryan going for that championship and trying to slay the beast at WrestleMania. It's the same story I was pitching for before WrestleMania 30. Here we are going into WrestleMania 36. What's old is new again. I still think that story works because when he comes out, the people still, they love Daniel Bryan. He's not some babyface that they look at and go, man, this guy is just regurgitating, scripted, forced, hokey bullshit. I don't believe him. I don't like him. They like him. They like him. There's something about him. He's the scrappy underdog, or, you know, and he just comes across as a genuine personality. He's got something that a lot of other guys in this company just don't have. Mohammed from Saudi Arabia. I'm a big fan of Becky Lynch and Daniel Bryan, so my question is about them. If the fans did not take to them the way they did, do you think they would still be big stars as they are today in WWE? If not, do you think they would be staying in the company? If the fans didn't take to Becky Lynch the way they did last year after SummerSlam, and even in the build-up to SummerSlam, they really wanted to see her win that championship, and then Charlotte swooped in and took it from her, and she turned heel, but everybody cheered, because she's another one. She's just genuinely likable. There's something about her where she's charming, and she's, you know, she uses all the puns. She got a good sense of humor. People like her. People like Becky Lynch. If they didn't get behind her the way they did, would she be as successful as she is today? Absolutely not. No. I still remember the stories about, was it Kevin Dunn or somebody not liking her accent, like how thick her accent was or something. Now, of course, Kevin Dunn can't do shit about the fact that the people gravitated to her the way that they did. So I hope that story is true, by the way, so that way he has to suffer in silence as he sits in the truck every week listening to her. But no, I don't. No, if the fans don't take to her in the way that they did, especially after Nia then punched her in the face and made her an even bigger babyface, if you're saying, would the company on their own have tried to push her and shove her down people's throats to get her over? The answer is no. I don't think they ever looked at her as being the star of that horsewomen group. It was always Charlotte and Sasha. And of course, other names have been called up since then from NXT. They would have gotten opportunities long before Becky Lynch did. They were going to blow off the Becky Lynch match at Survivor Series last year. All roads seem to be pointing to Ronda Rousey and Charlotte as the main event of WrestleMania this year. So without that fan support, that does not happen. As far as Daniel Bryan goes, does he get as high as he would have without the fan support? Obviously not. Obviously not. He even admitted as much in his own book, WrestleMania 30. It was going to be him and Sheamus. Sixth from the top. That was going to be his spot at WrestleMania. After that whole angle, all those months everything with the Authority. Their big plan was to just put him in a match with Sheamus in the middle of the card. Or maybe they would have opened the show. Without that fan support, you think all that happens? You think they tell that story with Daniel Bryan? And the Yes Movement and all that? You're out of your mind. It was because of the fan support that it lifted them to heights they would not have reached if it was just up to Vince McMahon and WWE Creative. Because I don't believe for a second that WWE had any plans or any intentions of looking at either one of them as one of the top stars, as like the two top stars, top female star, top male star on the brand. The fans had to speak up. They had to express their support in order for that to happen. They did, and they became big stars. Without their support, that does not happen. Bobby from Corinth, New York. I am among the many unhappy with WWE over its booking. When AEW was first announced, I was hoping that if they succeed, they might force WWE to change its ways. With this NXT-AEW, quote, war, I cheer for both brands because more success for these promotions is better for the entire industry. But would you argue that AEW's success is more important than NXT? If NXT succeeds, WWE won't care because it's under their banner and they'll see it as their own success. If AEW succeeds, WWE might be forced to take a long, hard look at themselves and hopefully make changes. What say you? Well, that's not going to happen. They will not be making changes because AEW is having success. We've already seen it. AEW's already had limited success. I mean, we don't know if their audience could expand one day to be even bigger than it is. It's only been 3 weeks. But they've had success so far, and it has not changed a single thing about WWE's booking, the way they produce their shows, the storylines. It is still a slog to sit through. AEW has, in that respect, AEW has had virtually no effect. I mean, it has an effect in terms of them wanting to throw a bunch of money at people and sign them to contracts so they can't go to AEW, but storyline-wise, point to me the changes that we have seen as a result of AEW. Please. I would love to know what these changes are. I mean, the Revival got a little push there for a while. You know, Anderson and Gallows got a little push there for a while because they were in jeopardy of walking out. Revival still might next year. But other than that, there's been absolutely no effect. So I don't see that changing. Because they're making their billions from their TV deal and they're making their millions from their sweet Saudi money, and that's all they need. So what incentive is there for them to change? But I would agree that AEW's success is going to be a lot more important to the wrestling industry than NXT being a success on USA Network. Worst case scenario, if NXT continues to slide and a few months from now USA says enough is enough, then NXT is relegated back to the WWE Network. Not the worst outcome in the world. I mean, they'll lose whatever money they're making, but, you know, from the TV deal, NXT is going to be fine. And NXT and the Performance Center, they're loaded with talent down there that's not going anywhere. So NXT is going to be fine. AEW succeeding long-term on TNT is going to be giving a lot of people that extra option, not called WWE, that they did not have before to get exposure on a major cable network and make big money, because AEW's got a lot of money behind it. Anybody rooting for AEW to fail, or anyone thinking that it won't matter if they just flop and fade away, you're just being an ignorant fool. And I do think that you have people who are going to grade AEW on a curve right now and give them a little more leeway than WWE because they are new and because they want to see them do well. I do believe that to be true, but that's not going to last forever. We're still in the honeymoon phase right now with AEW for a lot of people. If you're a wrestler, if you are in the wrestling business and you do not want to see AEW do well, and I don't know who these people would be. I don't even know if they actually exist, but I'm just saying, if you are a wrestler and you are in the wrestling business and you do not want to see AEW succeed, if you have some kind of a vendetta against that style of wrestling, against the elite guys, if you don't like them, if you think they're full of themselves, whatever opinion on them you may have, then you're not the brightest color in the crayon box. A lot of wrestlers have, and a lot of wrestlers are going to be paid a lot more by virtue of AEW just existing. Just by them being around. It's going to be more money in your pocket. So yes, it is more important for wrestling for AEW to be a success than it is for NXT to be a success on television. Alex from Cleveland, Ohio, what do you think is the greatest rivalry in pro wrestling history from any promotion? Well, it's impossible to just narrow it down to one. I mean, I think of the Freebirds and the Von Erichs in World Class, which I regret that I didn't have access to that when I was that age. Although at that age, well, given the year that it happened, that would have been not impossible, but I don't think I would have been able to exactly process what I was seeing. So it kind of goes to age when we get into that question. But, you know, even if I was old enough to know what was going on, I don't think in New York I had access to World Class. Maybe I didn't, I just didn't know. So I kind of regret that I didn't grow up with that, because I've heard all the stories and I've gone back and I've watched, you know, the infamous cage match and a lot of the backstory between the feud between the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, and just watching the old footage and seeing the reaction of the crowd, and they felt it was so real. There are a lot of times I wish we could go back to those days, and I wish I could have been, like, you know, in the building when that stuff was going on. So you can't discount the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard in the NWA in their feud, Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, as real as that feud got. I miss that realism. Austin versus McMahon, Cornette and Russo, John Cena and the fans. There's been a lot of big rivalries in wrestling over the years. But my vote goes to Austin McMahon. You know, even Rock Austin. Rock Austin should be on that list too, but Rock and Austin was born out of the feud between Vince McMahon and Stone Cold. And that McMahon-Austin rivalry is one of the things that turned that entire company around and helped them win the Monday Night War. It was very lucrative, if you want to look at it in those terms. It was a very lucrative feud, a very lucrative storyline for WWE. And I still maintain that Vince McMahon is the greatest heel of all time. At least in that company. Maybe anywhere. And look at him now. He's still the greatest heel. Only now it's off camera. Christopher from Bethlehem. Between the Rockers and the Hart Foundation, who do you think was the better tag team? And what did you think of their unaired 2 out of 3 falls match from Saturday night's main event? Personally, I loved every bit of that match. I remember watching the match on DVD when it was released, and I thought it was good up until things fell apart with the rope break, and they did the best they could with it, but then, like, the finish and everything, when they were going for the heart attack, and it just felt like it fell apart. So I'm sure that was not anywhere close to the best match those two teams had. I don't really have a lot of fond memories of that being some kind of fantastic match, but it's also been a few years. I'd have to go back and watch it again. It's taken on sort of a legend because it was supposed to air on TV and it never did, and the Rockers won the belt, but they didn't, so it's become part of this, like, wrestling legend. Rockers and Hart Foundation, I mean, I was always a Hart Foundation fan, so if you're asking me personally, I picked the Hart Foundation. Rockers were a great tag team also, but the Hart Foundation were just, they were something special. You know, from the gear to the different personalities to the finishing move, the heart attack, like the whole package, the music, you know, some of the matches that they had against Demolition and the Bulldogs. These are classic matches. I have to pick the Hart Foundation. And Giuseppe from Stockton, California. Do you think if the WWF would have done Hogan versus Flair at WrestleMania 8 that it would have stopped any of the WCW momentum when Hogan arrived in the company when they had their match there? I mean, it would have taken some of the shine off the idea that it was their first televised match, you know, when Hogan came to WCW, but they still probably would have done the match. I don't think it would have changed anything. If, you know, Flair was the champion and their biggest star. Hogan was coming in as the other big star. I think they could have still done the match. Yeah, it would have taken some of the shine off of it, because part of the allure is, here's a match that you never saw in WWF. I mean, it happened at some house shows and stuff. It aired locally. But they never had that big TV match, that big pay-per-view match between Hogan and Flair. And now you're going to get to see it in WCW. So it would have taken some of the shine off of it. But I don't, you know, look, Hogan was going to have a lot of momentum coming into WCW no matter what. They gave him the big ticker tape parade. He was the biggest star in all of wrestling. Coming into WCW no matter what, it was always going to be a big deal. I don't think the WrestleMania 8 match, if it were to have actually happened, would have taken away much in the way of momentum. So you can keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I do hope to continue collecting questions. I'm going to plan on hopefully recording another one of the Sound Off inboxes. I think if I can get into the rhythm of doing two, you know, at least two per month, that would be good. I got a lot of great response. Over 20,000 people watched it on YouTube, which I was very happy with. So we'll be doing more of those as well. So keep getting those questions in. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle. And I will see everybody back on YouTube Live after AEW Dynamite goes off the air on Wednesday for our next Dynamite stream. And until then, be well, stay safe. I will also see you back here for episode 623, which, if you look at the calendar, just so happens to be the Halloween show. It doesn't make sense to do a Halloween show after Halloween. So the next Sound Off before Halloween is next Sunday. So we'll do the Halloween show next week. My favorite holiday coming up. This has been a really fun month because as somebody who does not really look at himself as a big TV watcher, like I don't watch a ton of television. I was thinking about this the other day, not even counting baseball, the baseball stuff that I follow. But you've got Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, and now NWA Power. So that's just the wrestling stuff that I watch every single week. And then we've had this month, which is perfect given what month it is, The Walking Dead, which I do still watch, Creepshow, which has been awesome. It's been my new favorite show on Shudder, which is a streaming horror service. If you want to check it out, they have a free trial period. Creepshow has now been adapted as a television show, and it's awesome. And the other one is American Horror Story, the new season, 1984. So Walking Dead, American Horror Story, and Creepshow. I cannot think of a better trio of shows to be watching here leading up to Halloween in the month of October. So I have been on cloud nine with all of my new shows. So I'll see you back here for 623 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Kofi Kingston goes from losing the championship one week to just smiling and chucking pancakes into the crowd the next. But this is everything that is wrong with the way the WWE treats their titles. It has been this way for years. John Cena made an Olympic sport out of coming out the next night after losing his championship and acting like he wasn't bothered by it at all. So why should it bother Kofi Kingston, I guess, right? Cena would be on TV cracking jokes about it. And my attitude is, and has always been, if he don't care, why should I?
The Solomonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solomonster on Twitter, @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster Sounds Off.